the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Marrera's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 16. We're normally not much to talk about come Supercoach because you're out of trades, but there's plenty to talk about with the news today with Josh Dunkley, and here to talk about how to attack that is Tommy. G'day, Tommy.
Yeah, how's it going, mate? There's always something to keep me on the toes with Supercoach. So, yeah, this morning we're thinking, what are we going to chat about? And here we go. Dunks is out and probably one of the top three players in Supercoach and throws everyone into a bit of chaos, which might be a good thing because it diversifies everyone's teams. The people that have got trades are probably sitting in a nicer position and, makes it a bit more interesting on the run home.
Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, I favour those with trades, and this is the benefit of having trades, and favours those with strong benches and covers. So I haven't even asked you what you're going to do or your plan is around the Dunkley. I thought we'd save for the record. So I imagine most of this pod will be talking about that, knowing that so many people own him. Like looking, I think he's 98% of the top 1,000, 97% of the top 100, 10 of the top 10. Gee, you'd be feeling pretty good if you were Dunkley, given what he's doing. 122 average for the season. I think he came in with an average of 110. So he's been a knockout pick, even though he's pretty underwhelming to start the season. Before we get stuck into Dunkley, and then we'll probably talk about a few other concerns in fields across each line, underperforming premiums, and whether we can afford to upgrade those or it's worth saving our trades. And then we'll look at some captain options to finish the season. But yeah, as I said, most teams, I think after last week's trades, will have 22 premiums on the field. So a lot of it now is just sitting and waiting and hoping for the best, which hasn't come so far. But before we kick off, how did you fare last week? Did you make some trades? And how did you finish up for the week?
Week went actually really well. So scored a 25.95. Got me up 119. Yeah, I was very happy with that. Got me up 119 spots to 495. And I think part of what got me up there was, I guess, how I played the captaincy. So I faded the Dunkley, which was the most popular pick of the week. Just fortunately, I guess, he got a 107 and it was subbed out at three-quarter time. So it could have not worked out, but then the vice on Bont, which was a little bit underwhelming, and that allowed me to go Dacos. And I think by the time we'd gotten to sort of that Bont-led game, everyone had sort of exhausted their captaincy options. And then obviously Dacos had a blinder and showed why he's the favourite for the Brownlow. So pretty good week for me that I'm very happy with. And I think in terms of that strategy around captains, I'm probably going to run that on the way home. We might talk a bit more about strategy a bit later. And the trades I did out Weddle and Ford, and I went O'Donnell from the Doggies. I just thought he was a warm body. I was going to go Ocean Mullen. I thought it'd just pay up an extra 20K and get someone that's going to play at least for hopefully a couple of weeks and give me a few points if someone's a laid out. And then got Libba in, who played well. CBAs were down, which is a little bit of a concern, but he's a tackle machine and that's why he's four so low.
Yeah, and McRae's CBAs are up. Bevo being Bevo. I'm looking forward to picking your brain on captains and that strategy about, fading the popular one, using your VC on the player who most people have as their fullback captain, trying to get him a bit of an edge there, because I think that's certainly a way, looking how similar teams are throughout, that maybe that captaincy pick is one to diversify, because the difference between having a Laird captain last week and having a Dacos is pretty significant. I scored 25.58, which actually bumped me up four spots to 224. At one point, I was looking like a really good week. Obviously, don't have Connor Rosie, who put up a 140, which hurt me a bit. But the biggest one is that I don't own that Sinclair who came storming home in that game. At one point, it looked like he was going to do a sub-80. He ended up going big, and then my D6 is a Will Day 65, which is a fair few points to put on the, or even a Ridley 78 to give up from a Sinclair. So outside of that, I think I would have had a pretty good week. Jack Steele also underperformed. So my trades ended up being what it was advertised, being getting in a Gilby for a Bailey Humphrey for the cash defence midfielder swing, because I've got the seven defenders with Sheasel and Will Day at D6 and D7 to help me with a bit of looping. And then I made the adjustment. I did send the email around to members that I was going to go the Petrarca, getting the best player possible. But then after seeing Nat Fyfe and later being out that he came injured, but more so the fact that he looked very underwhelming as a scorer and a potential someone to rely on, he was my looping option. And watching Callum Mills, which we'll speak about in a little bit more in detail, passing the eye test, I thought, well, I might take a haircut on Petrarca, save 100K, and got Darcy Parrish, who at the start of the year I earmarked both of them going a similar sort of output. So who knows, they scored silver on the weekend. Parrish 130, if he kicked a few goals, could have even been bigger, but you could have said the same about Petrarca. And that then gave me 100K cash carryover, which in my plans were to put on top of Johnson's head this week to get Callum Mills and be a bit of a cover there. M9, I know we spoke last week about your preference being, say, not having at best 23rd man, because one, that scoring, if he does a, say if Mills does a 105, what are you going to do? You're going to bench a midfielder and then they could put up a 120 anyway. You're better off saving that trade for if someone were to be injured and getting in a best 22 player. But having Jack Steele at M8, I'm not confident with him. I thought with Steele and Mills using that little looping could be in my favour. But obviously fast forward this week with Dunkley out, I don't think I'll be able to get Mills in anyway. So we'll speak about strategy and playing there, but let's go straight into that. So Fyfe out, and he was both of our cover, and I'll put my hand up. I think I put my hand up week two of the buys when he put up a 40-odd to apologise to members after I was very bullish on his prospects. He spent more time forward than I would have liked, and maybe it's because of this sore foot, which has then come out to be an injury. So I still think the play was worthwhile with his swing, but I think those who were cautious on both Elliot Yeo and a Nat Fyfe because of the injury history, it just showed with both of them being out. He was our cover, and then the big news, obviously, with Dunkley out, listed 1-2. I noted with a tweet today, last time we saw a corked calf, it was George Hewitt mid-last year, where he ended up missing the 2 weeks. I think we all held in Supercoach, and even Fantasy held, thinking he was only corked calf, he'd only be out for one, but he ended up missing more weeks than Patrick Cripps missed with a hamstring. So they can linger, and it was interesting to note that Brisbane noted 1 to 2 weeks on the injury report, which certainly needs to be taken into account when you're looking at what your plans are this week. Before we talk about what coaches should do, depending on how many trades they've got left, what are your current plans with Dunkley? Have you got cover in that forward position, or are you going to have to execute a trade?
I've got cover, but it's Marich, so I don't really think it counts. I guess fortunate for coaches or that are in a similar boat to me, plays first thing Saturday, Fyfe's the last game of the round. The only problem is I think the most prominent options for people come from Sydney. So for me, I'm really undecided what to do at this stage. Obviously, I've got Dunkley, I've got Fyfe, and I've got Marich. I've got no swing in the midfield that I can bring back that would I'm confident it would provide a decent score on field. So it's a little bit of a difficult situation. I'm hoping working through it with you on this in this chat helps me come to a decision. But I was doing some sort of rough math. If you think Dunks is going to go at his average, he's going to score 700. Like he misses two, he's going to score 720 points. If you bring in someone like a Sheldrick, they're going to score 80. You're sort of going to, so 160 from him over two, Dunks, 720, you get 880 points. You trade in a Butters, alternatively straight for Dunks. If he goes at 110, which is his average, you get 880. So you get the same amount of points on field, really going at their average and expected score, probably a little bit, above expectation for Sheldrick, even though he's been really good. So for me, I think I'm probably going to look at the way that gives me the most cover and mitigates risk the most, which will be moving on Fyfe and holding Dunkley, I think, with the amount of trades that I've got.
So that's moving on Fyfe to a Sheldrick?
Yeah, and I think there's better options out there, but he's the best one I can get to. That's the direction I'm leaning at the moment, but obviously we only found out about Dunks a couple of hours ago, so I've got to play around with some things. But I think holding Dunkley, if he misses two, you get six good weeks out of him. And then I've got the cover where Fife could miss the whole year and he's just a nothing pick on my bench, giving me nothing. So I feel like holding Dunkley in my situation with three trades left, getting to a warm body in Fife, someone that can give me cover, probably makes more sense. And at least then I'm covered in the back end of the year on a short-term injury or a late out. And with three trades, obviously Dunkley down and then Fife up is also a play, but that leaves me with one trade, which makes me very nervous with 8 weeks to go.
Yeah, and Sheldrick's obviously passing all tests in terms of scoring, but even eye tests and VFL scores, junior scores, as long as that midfield role's there, he's a bull in there. I don't know how Sydney keep on grabbing these sort of nuggety, tough, but good skilled midfielders. They just keep churning them out. The other name you could consider if you wanted to wait to on that Thursday to see what Marich scores. Obviously, we would love that 70 from him when we needed him in the buys, but he did look good, Marich, and who knows what he could do, is David Cunningham, who returned with a decent score, and he plays the last game. So he's an alternative to Sheldrick, who has that same mid-forward swing, and you can at least have a look at Marich to score first, because we say 1-2, you'd be surprised. I think Hewitt ended up getting some bleeding on his calf, which is why he missed the two. You'd be very surprised if Dunkley misses the two. They play Melbourne the week after, which is essentially a mini final to lock in a home final for them on the way home. So that's not a bad plan, getting in, holding Dunkley and getting in decent cover. As you said, it's just tricky having that game earlier with Sheldrick. My plan, and just going back on a few of my moves for the year, like I think you need to make a few bold moves to make a difference. And I think there's been four occasions this year where I've made a move last minute just with a bit of gut feel. And the first was, I think it was round three or four, getting rid of Constable and getting in Van Rooyen, which ended up giving me good coverage for the buyers, good cash gen, and worked well. Another one was the Zeeble to Ridley move, which made a lot of cash, plus cash gen, plus points so far. That one worked well. The one 2 weeks ago where I end up trading out Rosie for Anderson just because I didn't want to field Marich's 16 in the buys is probably come back to hurt me, because I had seven forwards before and that would have just meant that I could bench Dunkley and keep a Rosie, not to mention his scoring, plus save those trades. So that's the one which is going to come back and hurt. Mind you, that Parrish one, so far I'm feeling bullish about that. So three out of four ain't bad. My plan is, as it was always going to be, getting in Callum Mills for M9 as my cover, but that's not going to help cover the forward line. So that was going to be one straight trade, leave would be one trade remaining for the season. I'm now going to have to use two trades, which leaves me with none for the season. And it's already... it's already been executed. I'm looking at it. Remaining salary, $0. Trades left, zero. Round 17 trades, zero. I've clocked the game. But the trades is Fife to a rookie. I think I can afford Chesser, 150K, and use every single dollar they've given me in this game before I'm out of trades. And then I can get a Connor Rosie back, which that's what I mean. It's a wasted trade, that one 2 weeks ago. That then gives me seven forwards: Dunkley, Tirano, Butters, Goulden, Cornelio, Cameron, and Rosie. So going forward, I'll be able to have Cameron on the bench as cover for both forward and ruck if there's an injury there, and midfield, knowing I've got the seven forwards. If there's an injury in the mids, I can swing Rosie midfield and play Cameron in the forward line. And in defence, I've got Sheezel at D7. So although I've got zero trades and it's 8 weeks, going to be a very long 8 weeks, especially if we cop two injuries like we have in 1 week of a Fife and Dunks. But I think I've got enough cover to withstand that, and I don't mind that strategy of having the seven forwards there. Your thoughts on that quickly?
When you said going down to zero trades, it sounded very, very risky, but when you talk about it around having that cover, it makes a hell of a lot of sense, I think. Like you covered in the back line for an injury. So there's going to be a lot of coaches out there that don't have a decent D7 and don't have a decent M9, F7. And in that case, you know, going down to zero trades is crazy, because if you get a donut with 3 weeks to go or 4 weeks to go, hell, 8 weeks to go, your you're in a lot of strife, but the fact that you've got that cover there, they're trades that people would use that are in a situation where they don't have that cover, where you don't have to. If someone goes out for 4 weeks, it's fine. You plug Sheasel in and you've got some looping in 4 weeks on the back end. So look, it's a risk, but at the same time, you did the same risk last time. It earned you a lovely tracksuit, and this year you've actually got a hell of a lot more cover sitting there to cover those donuts when they come.
Yeah, nah, that might be the vindication I need. Obviously, I didn't have that cover last year, and I had a very empty bench, and that was nerve-wracking. Obviously, all I need is two injuries, and I'm stuffed with no trades left. But I quite like the fact that, say, it is a Dunkley situation and they miss 1 week. Most teams with trades wouldn't trade someone out if they're only out for one. They'll have to play a Marrick, which I think a lot might have to do this week, or a Sheldrick or a Cunningham. But knowing that I can just plug and play a Rosie, or it ends up being a Darcy Cameron coming off the bench, it might end up playing in my favour that I'll be playing an extra premium than most of those. So that's where I'm sitting. The question mark, which I need to go through now, and again, I'm sitting at 200th spot, and it'd be nice to get a top 100 finish. I know it's going to be tricky and using these trades for this without being able to do it, and we'll talk about some luxury upgrades later, being without a Jack Sinclair 2 years in a row. I think I pegged it 4 weeks ago saying I can't be ever going to go 2 weeks, 2 years in a row without a Jack Sinclair on the back end. But the question is, do I do a Rosie knowing he is owned by 2-6? Of the top 100 teams, if I want to make a dent, he's owned by 95 of the top 100. Or do I get a Jack McRae who's same price, same thing, forward mid-swing, potentially same scoring ability, if not his best, might, if he gets this midfield move we saw last week, could be better, and he's owned by 13 in the top 100. And then looking at my team, I'll then have a Ridley, a Bailey Dale, a Darcy Parrish, a Noah Anderson, a Jack Steele, and potentially McRae, who, whether it's a good thing or bad thing, because there's other players I'd much rather have, but at least it's very unique to those top 100. Where I found last year when I was trying to climb at the end, and one of my knocks on Supercoach, I love that it's limited trades and it makes that added amount of strategy, but it makes it hard to climb ranks at the end of the year, because in fantasy it's all about looking at those ownership numbers, picking uniques and trying to zig and zag those teams ahead of you, but you kind of, your hands are tied in Supercoach because you're out of trade. So part of me is leaning towards getting a McRae for that diversification, but I also have a bit of FOMO knowing I traded out Rosie, put up a 140 last week. If he keeps putting out 140s, it's going to hurt me, whereas at least if I get back into him and he performs well, at least I own him. What would you do if you're coming to 20th and you're trying to catch the top 100? Would you go unique in McRae?
It's a very hard one. I think, like, if you were going to put your money down somewhere, I don't think the line would be all that much different between, I guess, the over and under on them both, but you would probably have Rosie at higher. But what McRae does give you, you know, he's not gonna give up a hell of a lot of points, and there's the potential that it does swing if there's an increase in mid minutes. And one thing we can say for McRae is he's remarkably durable, so there's not a whole lot of risk there. And I'm just off the top of my head, I feel like Rosie's missed a few games over his career. No, not a hell of a lot. I'm just looking back now.
He did play more forward on the weekend, Rosie, which he got that early soccer goal versus the Dons, which is pretty, it should have been a Zach Butters mark goal. Instead, he dropped, went through his fingers, and then Rosie got the bonus, which hurt me because I'm a Butters owner, not a Rosie. And then got on the end of a couple late too. So, yeah, who knows? It's
Rosie's also coming off a 67 and a 76 before the weekend as well. So,
yeah, CBA's down, Rosie, 58%, played more forward. It's a tricky one. Like, this is where, but on the flip side, like, top 1,000 ranks are great. Achieving Supercoach is harder now than it ever has been with all the content out there. So those coaches who are striving for top 1,000, that's also a great finish. So part of me is thinking, well, if I get a Rosie, that's the safe move. And again, could lock me into that top 1,000 finish. Plus, help propel, but part of me is thinking of taking a punt on the Jack McRae move. But regardless, in terms of what I'm doing and using my trades. I'm not trading a Dunkley, and I don't think anyone would advocate trading a Dunkley. As you said, he's averaging 10 more than outside of Taranto, 10 more than the next best forward, which is a Butters. And over the course of the season, if he misses one and then returns 8 weeks to go, his total points is going to be pretty similar to that, plus any cover you have, even if it is a rookie cover. So the play would be more so training around that cover and hoping you get a good one. Marich, most teams have. You'll be able to have a look at him, but yeah, the Sheldrick's the fullback, the ideal one. I think I'd rather see what Marich does. If he doesn't do well, then go the David Cunningham from Carlton move over pulling the trigger on the Friday night. But yeah, no Warner this week again means that you'd think that Sheldrick's going to keep that midfield role. Richmond give up plenty to mids. Jesus, it's a trick.
I think I really like all moves. I'm looking at my team like, how do I do that? I think for Dunkley, for me, I think Cunningham makes sense, even if it's for a short period of time. I've got two trades left. I bank cash, and then, you know, if I don't get injuries on the run home, 3 weeks to go, I can upgrade my two worst performers, or even if it's just my worst performer, and try and earn, you know, 60 points, 20 points per week on someone that's going to score really well, or do I take the risk in a couple of weeks because Day's just continually underperforming and there's Sicily. So, I like that play that you've suggested for me, and I really like yours.
Okay, so you're now thinking passing Sheldrick, hoping you don't have to use a trade if Marich does. What's the line for Marich? Probably 50?
Yeah. 50 would probably do it. But at the end of the day, even getting Cunningham is another point of cover. Obviously, comes with a hell of a lot of injury risk, but Nat Fife's probably not going to play at all. So do I just extract his cash and have two bites at the cherry anyway, in terms of that cover? 50 is not great, and Cunningham could, you know, that's probably his floor, really. So,
he interesting. Got some set of bounces, Cunningham, 21%, had some even the week before. They love him there at the Blues, put up big numbers in the VFL. Who knows? But that's why this is good. As I said, it gets pretty mundane. Supercoach at the end of the year when teams are very similar. Something like this is going to certainly put teams to the test. So that would then mean you'll have two trades left if you do that Cunningham move.
Yeah. So three at the moment to make a trade this week. So yeah, they're playing Brizzy. Ooh. He's probably not going to score well, Marich, is he?
Is that? Sorry. Oh, Marich.
Marich is playing Brizzy.
It could be a 200-pointer that week.
I think it makes sense to get out from under Fife. He's going to be out for a while, and I think even if he does come back, they'll manage him into finals if they make it. So, yeah, I like that. Two's okay. Two's okay on the back end if you've got semi-decent cover. And look, the trades are there to be used. If you've got two sitting there at four rounds to go and you get a one-week injury, you trade there every day of the week. So having the cash sitting there and just sort of buy time and hope I don't get injuries because I don't have the cover that you have.
Okay, so then we talked post-buys, the ideal number's five. I think that's... off a lot of teams, it's more 2 to 3. I think most coaches are running with right now. Some will have to use one this week, particularly if Marich doesn't score well. So most teams might have one or two. With that one or two, say if you've got two left, are you holding that up until probably 4 weeks to go before you start doing luxury training? Because there's underperformers across each line and popular players. So in defence, Sheezel and Will Day both put up substandard scores, 65 and 79 to Sheezel. Midfield, there's still teams with Jack Steele, like myself, who put up the 86. And then forward line, Darcy Cameron, 61. Canelio, 86, when we're seeing these other scorers punching out big hundreds, giving up 20 points per week. 8 weeks to go, 160 points is a fair bit. You can potentially make up. When are you starting to look at doing luxury upgrades, or when you've got two or less, they purely... you got to earmark them for potential injury trades.
Yeah. Depends on how risk averse you want to be or how aggressive you want to be, I guess. If obviously if you trade the if you use them now in a situation where you don't have cover or in a couple of weeks, you know, you move a Will Day to Sicily, obviously that's going to result in a heap of points. But if you get a donut with six rounds to go or you're fielding, you know, an O'Donnell in your defense, like I would have to if I had no trades and he's putting up 20s, that benefit of having Sicily is going to evaporate extremely quickly. So for me, I think four's about right to just go, okay, yeah, I'm going to pull the trigger and then hope I've got cover if there is a donut to make up that difference. Obviously, you can go earlier and hope for the best that worked out for you last year. In the 2 years that I come top 10, I had trades sitting there. And I think both years, that was part of the reason I got up there or at least held. In 2020, it was the reason I held. And in 2021, it was the only reason I came home so strong is because everyone was out of trades. I had them to make. We got a lot of injuries. I did luxury upgrades and that got me home. So it really depends on how risk averse you are. I think four is probably the right number for me. Obviously, if, you know, Will Day comes out and goes 65-65, that changes the math on that, but he's got a season average of 93. Obviously, just 1 week ago, he put up a massive score. Sheezel had 31 touches on the weekend and went over a ton in fantasy. So the 79's not all that bad. I think they're good enough to hold at this point, and I think for me, it's not worth the risk of carrying a seven-week donut.
Yeah, I think you're right. So let's just go back to last year, because it doesn't haunt me, but it's still in the memory bank that with Crisp and Short's underperformance when they were giving up, I think Crisp was even giving up 50 points per week to a Jack Sinclair. It's when he got moved from half-back flank to midfield half-forward switch and just wasn't scoring, and Jaden Short got moved from half-back to midfield forward, even at some point full-time forward switch and wasn't putting up the scores. So when there's a clear role change and then you can't revert back to that season average and think, are they going to bounce back to this, then I would jump off. But all those players I mentioned, like Harry Sheezel scoring this year when Aaron Hall isn't playing, is very close to top six defender numbers. And as you said, he put up a big fantasy score last week. Obviously, he must have been down on efficiency, but just watching parts of that game, it didn't help me that there was the exact same time start as the Frio Bulldogs game, so I didn't catch most of that. But when I did look, like he was basically the Nick Dacos halfback role where he'd be up at every stoppage, free man, not worrying about a man running off. So nothing to worry about for him in terms of he should be able to produce his 96 average for the rest of the year. Will Day played well, but gave away three free kicks pretty early. Then they got smashed early. And as we know with Supercoach, that if the game's over early, most of those points are attributed to those early scores in the game. And that's when he was giving away those free kicks, but he had the role we wanted, inside mid, dropping back, loose man, taking some marks. So I'm confident he can do that 94 average, which he did, as you said, not worth a trade. Jack Steele, we've talked about him enough the last few weeks, but he, again, run smoothly and didn't look hampered by that knee, just out of form. And again, I think he should be able to average 100 from here, and I'd love to be able to upgrade him to a top eight midfield, and he's out of those names, he is the one. If I had trades left, I'd love to get him up to a top, but maybe it's a play to get a Callum Mills and start looping rather than trading out a Steele. We'll speak about Mills in a minute soon. And then Darcy Cameron, his role was there. He just, Witts is a hard ruckman to score against. Plus, the way the game was played with no pressure by Gold Coast, there weren't many stoppages. His numbers were down in terms of rack attendances with Big Billy Frampton in the team, but I think we've seen a big enough sample over the last 24 months of Darcy Cameron, what he can score as first ruck, that I wouldn't see that 61 as what to expect going forward. I think that's more of an anomaly. So none of those underperformers were really concerning to me. Cogs, I thought, was a bit stiff. I know you're still an owner. He was a leading possession winner for Giants, won some good contested footy. It just, when the game was on the line, he was on the bench and wasn't getting possessions, and that's when those players got their big scores who got some critical possessions, and he kind of missed out on that. But it's been happening long enough in the year that he looks to be a step below those top six. But again, I wouldn't be wasting a trade to get Cogs up. The ones I'd be earmarking for these luxury upgrades would be the James Sicily from a the Sheasel or Will Day when he returns, because knowing that lots of coaches won't be able to have him, and a Clayton Oliver, but I wouldn't be jumping in early on him. He's missed 5 weeks. I need to see a string of form from him first. So let's go talk Callum Mills. Obviously, ridiculously down in price from that injured sub game, then his healthy sub game, first game back, and then he didn't really blow anything out of the water last week, but the role was there. Season high CBAs, scored the 106, down 230K from his starting point at 404K. Your thoughts on him, and thoughts, I know your thoughts from last week was no point getting a 23rd man and wasting a trade, but if he can be your 23rd man and you could somehow use him with seven forwards to be your cover this week for Dunkley, do you advocate getting in Millsy?
Yeah, I do. I think the 23 man, it's very dependent on who you're getting in, I think. It also depends on how many trades you've got. I think getting the cover from Mills, who, you know, he was a top eight mid last year. Obviously, the question marks and the queries and the issues that a lot of owners had this year is that his role changed around a heap. Season high CBAs on the weekend, but obviously no Warner, which probably doesn't help because it doesn't give us a good insight into what that role is going to be. But at the same time, he's obviously, you know, on the weekend, he was one of the most preferred there. So, look, I think Mills at his price definitely justifies it. I think when I was saying no 23 third man, it's more around getting someone that's not really capable of being a top line or isn't going to consistently put up numbers that are going to warrant doing that sub off. But I think Mills, even with the injury, I think he's worth it. He meets that threshold for me where if you can bring him in and have him as that cover, I certainly would. If I had 100K sitting there to put on 5 fed, it would simplify things a lot. So I'd just go to Callum Mills.
Yeah, so that was always my plan. But as you said, even before, so I could do that with one trade, have the Marrickers cover, and then know that I've got Mills there to loop with Jack Steele, knowing he's a pretty weak M8, and have that midfield cover. But it's all good and well having the 23rd man, but he can't provide cover for me because I've got seven forwards if I get an injury in defence or if I get an injury in forward line. So the ideal 23rd man is a DPP player where you can swing them around. And I was even weighing up, do I use two trades to get a Rosie or McRae rather than, even though Mills is cheap as chips and can save me a trade just because he's going to provide more cover. So it's all good and well, 23rd man, but he might only be able to provide cover in a certain scenario in the midfield, which
it also might not be good enough to loop as well. So it is only really there as cover. Like, you look at his scores prior to the injury at 100, 80, 98, 97, 87, 103, 123, 94. Like, they're not bad scores, but they're very borderline in terms of looping. I think most of those scores you'd probably loop with Steele, but at the same time, it could go the other way. It really could. He could go to the back line or he could go forward and you end up losing points on that week. So I think as a cover move or a genuine loophole options, Rosie or Butters gives you that, where Mills is, you know, it's a bit right in the middle, right on that edge.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. So 112 the average in 2021, 115 last year, which was split between a 122 first half of the year, pre-buy of 65% centre bounce. And then he started playing that bit of a wing role, loose man defence, and I know owners got frustrated. He went 111 post-buy, 109 last five, and even less in the final. So 110's probably around the mark, but as I said, Jack Steele, I doubt he's going to go 110. So the question is, if you've been holding on to a Jack Steele who has been playing midfield, not putting up scores, whereas Mills has had the excuse playing back line with those injuries early in the year, you could just do a little switch from there to a Mills or get that 23rd man. I'm a believer. I think he's going to average 110 from here, Millsy, and I'll certainly advocate coaches to look into that. But just make sure that cover is going to be worthwhile. If it doesn't help you this week, then are you better off pulling a move like using those trades to get a better cover in the forward line where you'll be, if Dunkley misses two, you'll really be hurting it. Any other hot topics you think we should cover?
I think that does it. Like, I think they're the issues that people are going to be facing. There is certainly an argument. Like, if I had more than, well, I did, I had more than three trades that I moved on, still, I still think that's probably something that owners would look at if they can't, you know, get cover, or even if they can and they can still move him on because they've got the trades available. Like, he just doesn't look right. And what he's giving up to the top echelon of midfielders is just too great. And, you know, that's going to be, you know, a couple of hundred points come end of the year if you hold a steal and he keeps on performing this way. I think, you know, if you've got the trade, I think one thing that this year's thrown up is it's been a hell of a lot of cash gen that's come from a hell of a lot of avenues. So people have been able to upgrade their teams, and teams are very similar. But people have also had to aggressively trade because of the injuries, and it has been a high injury year that people are running out. If you're in a position where you've got those trades, that's where you can really, you know, make a big jump on the competition is doing those sideways and upgrades, because people are going to be running home with very similar teams, and to diversify yourself is going to make a pretty big difference come the end of the year, because there's still, you know, a third of the season to go. That's a hell of a long time when you consider where we are now and what's happened between the start of the year and now. There's still a hell of a long time to go. So setting yourself up to get the maximum amount of points week on week, whether that's through cover, whether that's through having the injury trade, there is no right and wrong strategy. The year that I came top 10, I came home with a wet sail and I had heaps of trades, and that's why. And then obviously last year you've come top 10 and you had no trades, but you came home with a wet sail because you were aggressive and you got the best players on field. So there's no right way to play this game. And I think it's just trust your instincts and, you know, try and anticipate what's going to come and how your team's going to be the absolute best it can be.
One more for you then. What is the cost of a donut? So say if you have a marriage, or if you don't have a marriage, you have no cover in the forward line. Would you use a trade just to get cover? So say you can get a Cunningham, but that then leaves you with zero trades for the year? Or would you just wear the donut and keep that one trade up your sleeve for a potential to have a longer term injury later in the season?
Yeah, I'd probably be happy to wear that donut. Like, if the option was Cunningham, who could easily put up a 50, two donuts on the end of the year. Like, if you've got one trade and you're going to use it on Cunningham to cover a donut this week, I think that's going to cost you more points on the back end of the year for sure. So I'd rather eat a donut than bring in a subpar rookie who's Carlton play this week. It'll be a competitive game for sure. They're not going to get the run out of it that they got last week, you wouldn't think. And you know, so many Carlton players scored so well in that game that I don't think that's the average that he's going to put out. So I don't think that's worth it. I'd rather anticipate a multiple week injury, what we've seen from Clary and so many others this year, that a suspension, a Sicily, or a hamstring injury, or a calf, MCL, like, these are going to put players out for you know, 4 or 5 weeks, and they happen every year. So I'd rather eat a 1 week donut than potentially eat four.
Yeah, I agree, and you won't be alone. Looking at teams around the top, their cover is very thin. I think teams look pretty good around the bye rounds, but then for these final upgrades, we've been trying to get rid of every playing rookie you've got just to get that extra bit of cash for the upgrades. So you won't be alone with the donuts, and I'd rather wear a donut this week and keep a trade up your sleeve for that bonus one, unless you can get a premium as that cover. Captain, so you mentioned off the top a potential strategy of yours was to fade, knowing that Neil and Dunkley were the popular VC options, and put the VC on someone who you thought most people would captain, like a Bont or a Laird, giving you the double chance if they were to flop. Talk to us about that strategy and if it's something you're going to continue to do.
Yeah, I think it will be. It's week by week. Like, typically I want to... coaches play this, the captain, very differently. I know a lot go for the player with the higher ceiling, but potentially a lower floor with their VC. And I typically will play it where I will look for the best consistent option as my VC, someone safe. I think what I'm going to look at towards the end of the year is all our teams are so similar that to diversify ourselves, you don't want to, you know, 50% of the competition are on Dunkley and De Bont. and Dunkley shits the bed, then everyone else is on Bont. Bont was who I thought was going to be the best scorer of the weekend, so that was who I wanted to put my VC on, because if Dunkley didn't do great, then I'm on Bont like everyone else. Or if Bont doesn't do great, then I've got a third bite at the cherry in comparison to everyone else. So I think I will probably look at that, but at the same time, I'm not going to be taking significant risks and, say I go Bont this week and there's no one else after it that I like. No, they play Friday. But if there's a player on, say, early in the round that I'm not a massive fan of, I'm not going to just jump on them for the sake of it. I think just still looking at who those players that I think are going to score the best. But if there's two options, probably go the second one. On Supercoach, if you've got Supercoach Plus, you can see who are the most captained players in the top 1%, top 5%. Going in there, I'll probably go in there, have a look. Okay, everyone's loading up on, say, a Nicky Dacos. Maybe I'll avoid Dacos and go that second player that people are looking at. Might be a Petrarca, and then have a look at Merritt later in the week.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And on the flip side, if you try to preserve your rank or your league standing, you can pick the popular player and take some safety net there. I like it. So that's my theory with more AFL fantasy, where the VC loophole, you essentially have two cracks at it. So rather than picking a substandard person with your VC and taking a flyer, why wouldn't you do who you think the best player is and who you think the captain should be? Put him as your vice captain, because we've seen it before. Your VC might put up a 112, which for me is hard to knock back, and then your captain comes after that and puts up a 140. Whereas if you just back in your captain as your VC and they flop, you think, great, I've got two chances at this with the loophole. I'll then take a punt of someone after, but at least gets you a full look at that player who you ordinarily would have as captain. So I'm more of that play than taking a flyer on a VC, because looking this week, there's some plenty of options. Goulden versus Richmond, who give up plenty at the MCG. Imagine he is a good high-risk, high-ceiling player. We've then got the Bulldogs-Collingwood matchup, which means Bont won't get tagged and Nick Dacos won't get tagged. So I think that game's going to be quite popular. Also, Darcy Cameron, not the best ruckman in the world, so English could put up a decent score. Then we've got Lachie Neale versus West Coast, which I imagine he might even break the system there. So I imagine most teams will be done with their captain VC by the first game on the Saturday. Where are you currently leaning towards?
Neil's probably, like, he's the most obvious option, but O'Neill might go to him with the tag as well, which makes me a little bit nervous on that. So probably at this stage, I'm looking at probably a Bont and Pally, but it'll be hard to go past Dacos after what he did for me on the weekend. Probably a Bont, which I think will probably be the most popular VC. And then I reckon I might throw the armband to Dawson against the Bombers.
Yeah, lots of options this week, isn't there? There's some good options this week.
I think the Port Boys against Gold Coast at Adelaide Oval might be a really good shout for a really high ceiling game as well. There is potential that you can obviously the Saturday night game that you could go one of the Port Boys into a Dawson or even a Laird. I think Klopp's on Twitter put out a stat that every single week that Laird had a down game over the past 3 weeks, he's bounced back with a huge one. So he's also an option. Obviously, we're not going to tag the Bombers. So I think there's heaps of good options. I think I probably will look to get my captain later. It's whether I go Bont, who will be the most popular option, I think, into them, or maybe I go a Rosie into a Dawson and get a bit creative.
Yeah, that would be the creative move. Just on face value here, I'd be a Bont into a Lachie Neale. Using your theory, which I knowing that most would use it on that Friday night, do you avoid that week, do the VC on Neale? Because if he doesn't get tagged, he's going to go big. And then knowing you've got a fullback in a Dawson or a Laird, I also like that.
Tricky. Also English. English has kind of gone out of favour for coaches lately. Obviously, coming up against Cameron, that's an even size matchup, which English doesn't get a hell of a lot of. So there's probably an opportunity that he's going to get a few more hit outs that he does every week. And where is that? That Marvel, but still, yeah, he likes Marvel. Yeah, there's so many good options. Actually, I might even go English. It's obviously competitive midfield for Collingwood. The ball gets flicked around a lot. It doesn't. Yeah, don't know. I reckon I'm English. I'm English into Dawson at this point. I reckon.
At this point, I am near Dacos into Neil, I think. Dacos, mate, Dacos with no tail. Like, doggies just let them go.
Yeah. He's been so good. Like, for a second-year player, like, I know he cops a lot. Like, people talk about him a lot, but I still think it's not enough of how bloody good he is as a second-year player. Like, I think if he was fifth, sixth year, yeah, maybe give him a bit of criticism about how his defensive work is. But this guy was a rookie last year. He's one of the better players in the comp. It's outrageous. And he hasn't gone under a ton since round 9. And the lowest score, he's got 100. The next lowest is 118.
He might be me. He might be. What did he do? Have they played Bulldogs yet? No, I haven't played this year. Anyway, trade insights, I'll put my final. Yeah, final trades as it stands is I think I'm McRae over Rosie to try to differentiate, but I don't know how many more 140s I can cop after trading out Rosie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like it, mate. Like, take the risk, and you know, I think if this pays off, that's the move that you need to, you know, climb up it, back into that top 100, and maybe even get pointier, depending on how the other teams look, and you know. I think a lot of teams are low on trades, no cover, where they're just going to flounder and just be doing moving one out, one in, and you're sitting in a pretty it's a risky spot. But when you look at the actual players you got sitting on your bench, I think it's worth doing.
Let's hope so. Alrighty, Tommy, thanks for your time again. We'll chat to you next week.
Cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone.
When two hearts are kept.